Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts, the new talk. This is going to be podcast 578, I hope. I hope I didn't get the numbers wrong. But we're going to talk about culture wars in this podcast. New definitions of male and female roles, feminism, and the backlash to feminism in podcast 578. But first, we're going to talk about the backlash to winter, which, of course, is coming. And, you know, if you have a bunch of different systems in your house, heating, air conditioning, water heaters, things of that nature, pipes, plumbing, we all do. And, of course, when it gets cold, bad things happen. And so I want to remind everybody to think about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for home or business emergencies. Because when it comes to keeping all these systems running right, especially these days, at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want reliable quality service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488 online, ryanplumbing.com. Now, they are also still doing the heating and water heater checks. You can still ask them about in-floor heat if you want in your garage or your basement, but the main thing is it's going to get cold, and it's going to get cold very soon. Like this week, we're going to start to see the deep freeze come in. It happens every year around Christmas or in the first part of December. And then, of course, after Christmas, you know it gets super cold. And if you've ever had your pipes burst, the first thing you think is, who do I call? You call Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Once again, in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. They go back four generations in St. Paul. And if you stick around to the end of the podcast, I got a special message for plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, HVAC control specialists, wherever you are in the metro, wherever you are in the country. So stick around for that. That's coming up at the end of this podcast, podcast 578. All right, let's get into this discussion with Jennifer Loken, my friend, who posted an article on her Facebook page, which I really, it was in returnofkings.com. I'll tell you about that in a second, but there's two articles that really interested me this week. First was this Manosphere discussion about Manosphere negatives in returnofkings.com, and also this article, which I think was in... well, I'll post a link on the blog at the podcast page at thebobdavispodcast.com. But this is a discussion of how feminism has failed from within the ranks of feminism. So there's kind of a culture war going on within the culture war, so to speak. And I think the election of Donald Trump may bring some of these divisions out on both sides of the political spectrum. And Jennifer has an interesting perspective on all of this. We'll talk about it with her right now. Well, we're not going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about right. This article you posted, which I think is fascinating, which is this whole thing about the feminization of men and all that. And that's what I want to talk about. And your right. position, I mean, I want to know what you think about. I think it's just really interesting and very unique because, you know, what's going on? I mean, I see a lot of man buns out there. That's kind of where and, you know, so that's kind of what I want to talk about. I don't even want to talk about Trump or any of that. I want to talk about right. your experience. So I'll just start asking you questions. So so you want to be introduced as Jennifer Jo Loken or Jennifer Loken?
Well, actually, my name's pronounced Loken.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So
good.
Yeah.
All right.
They don't go by the rules of English. My
well, that's
family.
German, right?
Actually, it's Norwegian.
Really? Okay. Well,
yeah,
there
there's
you go.
A town called Loken, Norway.
Okay. I will pronounce it that way. But then I'm just going to start by asking you some questions. So here we
Sounds
go.
Good.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm talking with Jennifer Jo Loken, and she posted an article recently on Facebook, which fascinated me. And this is this discussion about what is happening to men purportedly as the result of feminism. And part of it has to do with gender roles. Part of it has to do with men in modern society. But it's American women versus women in other parts of the world, Latin America and Asia, and how they treat men and how they look at men and how they think about men and relationships versus in America. So that's you posted this article by I don't even know who this was by. It was in it was some blog, The Return of Kings or something. I have no idea what it is. But it's a theme that I have seen a lot in out there. And I guess the best place to start is I want you to talk about your personal situation. You're the mother of six kids, which is amazing in itself. I know you love your husband. I know that you guys, what part of the country do you live in?
We live in rural Minnesota. So, okay. Yeah, I'm a stay-at-home mom with my six kids, and I homeschool them, and I very much so am what they would classify as a traditional woman that feminists despise.
Which is please don't be offended, but you have six kids, and what is your age?
I'm just turned 35.
It's amazing. So it's very traditional in the sense that people that grew up in the 50s and 60s, that's what everybody's mom was. They were 35 and 34 and 36, and they had five or six kids by the time they were your age. So you're doing something really, it's really against the grain because, you know, most women are out in the workforce and they're delaying childbirth or they're having one or two kids. Why would you have chosen that path?
I've always just wanted to be a mom. So I started dating my husband when I was 17 and he was 23. And we got married when I was 19 and I had my first child at the age of 20. And I just always knew that that's what I wanted to be. It was never a question of getting a job or anything like that. Now, once my kids are out of the house, I'm going to get a job because, dang it, women sitting at home, generally, it doesn't end well.
They just eat too much or what?
You get the Peg Bundy situation, yeah.
Oh, the Peg Bundy situation. What's that?
The sitting on the couch eating bonbons and you watch soap operas all day and it just is just terrible, toxic environment. So
you posted this article, which basically, I don't even know how to paraphrase this, but the guy suggested in the writing, the guy that wrote the article suggested that his experience traveling around the world, being a single guy, was that there's something wrong with American women in that they perceive themselves to be competitive with men, and it's not like that in the rest of the world. Latin American women are different. They know how to treat a man. Asian women know how to treat. I'm talking about women in Asian countries, Vietnam or places like that. And that there's something wrong with the situation in the United States with men and women. And then there's this whole thing I want to talk about, you know, going ahead is this idea that men have become feminized and they're afraid to sort of assert their masculinity. And why did you post this?
I just thought it was a really good article. In general, the first line always caught me off because it was talking about, you know, how
housewives are happier than feminists.
Yeah, housewives are. And this is proven. I mean, there's so many scientific studies that the Return of Kings is an interesting blog site. Their founder, Roosh V, the press went kind of after him quite heavily for wanting to do meetup groups. Because he wrote a satirical article talking about how it could make rape legal on private property.
Well, that's a way to get the media.
It was a terrible satire article. I mean, it was like it was just.
So he didn't mean that he wanted to make rape legal on private property.
He was being completely tongue in cheek, kind of, you know, to, you know, clickbait kind of a thing. So,
but yeah. Housewives are happier than feminists and happier than women in any other occupation.
Right. And I know like a lot of people that women, they do wish that they could be at home and if the situation, but you know, economy these days also kind of prevents that too. I mean, we live in a dual income society now, mm-hmm. which isn't helpful either. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, for us, it's really hard because, you know, we have to scrimp and we have to save and we have to make things work. And we live very, very simply because we do only have the one income.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The older I get, the less interested I am in any of that stuff anyway. I in fact, I want to just sell all my furniture and just have a chair. I don't. There's something great about just having an empty living room with a TV and a chair. for a guy.
You would be a good minimalist, as Aaron Clary would say.
Yes, I would be. So, so he's talking about how more people are now questioning this female supremacy in the culture wars than ever before. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, the idea is, okay, so a lot of times divorces are initiated by women against men, like anywhere from 74% to 80% of divorces are initiated by women on men for the simple reason, most of them, they cite the reason of I just wasn't happy. He wasn't cutting it per se. And the courts reward women for this all the time in terms of custody, and because they usually get custody almost 90% of the time, they get full custody of the kids, and they also get alimony, they get child support, oftentimes they get the house. I mean, there's nothing to lose for women in terms of if they leave their husband, where it used to be they had to pay a price, and there was also a societal backlash, and you know, women oftentimes would shun other women if they did get a divorce because it was kind of a frowned upon thing, because marriage was actually considered an institution that you stayed in no matter what, because your word is what it was about, not necessarily if you were happy or not.
So you would be, so if your husband was just a jerk and a horrible person, you would stay in the marriage because it was the right thing to do?
Yeah, because they actually found that, they did studies and they found that actually kids that are in a home that is dysfunctional, they're more happy if their parents are together than if they live in if their parents get divorced. So if for the sake of my kids, I would for sure stick it out no matter what. So I might not be as nice to him too.
But that's, of course, that's not happening, right?
No, he's great. So, and I'm really nice. So it works.
you don't feel that that you're limited by the fact that you're, a mother of six and staying at home and not working?
Not really. I feel like I have more free time. I get to spend time with my kids, which they are actually pretty fantastic and pretty well behaved. So it's not as much of a burden per se. And I don't know if that's just because I am home with them and they have the consistency of a, you know, caregiver all the time. So,
right.
So no, I don't feel that at all. In fact, I think that, we had one week where I had to go somewhere like every day and I was like, this is just dumb. This is so much work to have to go somewhere every day. I can't believe people do this all the time.
Oh my God. When you work alone and when you work at home, as I do, it's really weird to go out there and see everyone racing around like maniacs.
I know. I'm like, well, how can people stand this?
I do all my shopping in the middle of the night because it's the easiest thing to do. So let's talk about, I'm sure you have friends that are single, either women or men. And you hear all these stories about what it's like out there, dating, for men. And one of the things I hear all the time from women is that men are not aggressive enough, that they become feminized and they're wusses. They won't fight back. They won't, which women seem to want. Do you encounter that same thing?
Well, I think that that's probably true. I mean, if you look at the sales for 50 Shades of Grey, I mean, that was women who were buying that book. I mean, so there's got to be something to that. But I think it goes twofold, though. The feminist movement has systematically made normal interactions between the genders pretty taboo. And so, like, they've expanded the definition of rape to being, you know, basically any sort of unwanted contact in any way, shape, or form. They consider that rape. And so the whole men are terrified of being accused of rape. I mean, that's just
I think that's especially true with young men, too. And I think it's also true that young men do not know how to act around this. Are you raising your girls? How do you talk to them about as they get older? How do you talk to them about this?
Well, I really stress that number one, sex is something that is only for marriage, not, I don't do the, oh, it's when two people love each other, because that's crap, especially in the teenage world. I mean, you love a lot of things, you know, so when you're a teenager. So I really stress, you know, sex is only for marriage, and that men are not necessarily perfect, but they are deserving of respect just as much as they are as well. And that respect is earned by both. And if you want things to be good, you have to have that mutual respect and that mutual kind of appreciation. And you do need to actually be kind to one another. I mean, if you want to be mean to somebody, save it for some random person on the internet and keep your kindness at home.
Oh, you're turning them into trolls is what you're doing.
Oh, God.
God forbid.
We win the great meme war.
Oh, please. That's the one thing that I just am so tired of, the memes. I wish they would please make the memes stop, but they don't. They will never stop. They will always be there. We've got that to them. He says, and I think this is an interesting comment too, that there's a big revolt brewing against what he refers to as the cancer of feminism.
Right. Well, there's the whole manosphere, they call it, and that consists of just men who are just, you know, sick and tired of it. And then there's ones that take it a little bit further, and they go what they call MGTOW, or man going his own way.
What's it called?
Man going their own way.
MGTOW.
Which is their, yeah, MGTOW. Yeah.
What's how so, do you spell that? How do you spell that?
MGTOW.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, men going their own way, where they just kind of check out of the whole idea of dating, marriage altogether, and they just don't want to have anything to do with, you know, women in general. They will find the ones that go to the clubs and stuff, and they'll use them that way. But they just have no desire to actually be in an emotionally committed relationship with a woman at all.
Why is that?
They're scared of the family court systems. They're scared of things like have to do with like parental alienation, which is when, you know, a couple gets divorced and the one who either has primary custody really bashes and tries to paint the other one in a really, really bad light and try to get their child to actually alienate themselves.
Yeah, I know that happens a lot. To me, that's just trailer trash, you know, kind of behavior. But I guess that happens everywhere, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it is one of those things. And so they just are scared to death of women in general in terms of, you know, getting accused of a crime. So, I mean, it does happen. I know my husband's going to love me telling this story. But he was actually falsely accused by a local girl when he was 18. Thankfully, what happened was he wasn't even at the party that it allegedly happened at. He was actually at work and he had pay stubs and all this other stuff to kind of prove that he wasn't even there.
Right.
So
he was lucky for that.
Right. Right. So he is very lucky, but the damage to reputations, because, you know, women don't really have any consequences for making false rape charges against men either. There's zero.
Well, I mean, this is the reason, by the way, that we used to have the death penalty for rape and they don't have it anymore. And I can remember being very young and reading that the reason that they didn't have the death penalty for rape was because it was one of those charges that can be false. You can end up, you know, hanging people who are falsely accused. So
right.
It's interesting that that came up. And of course, we all know that To Kill a Mockingbird, right, is a story about a white woman accusing a black man of rape because
right.
she didn't know how to explain her own problem, right? That it was wasn't it her father in the end that turned out to be the aggressor in that case?
Right. So, but yeah, so they're just terrified of it. And, you know, with as much false rape, you know, you have the Duke LaCrosse case where, you know, they were all accused of raping.
University of Virginia, right? Wasn't it UVA that same thing with the Rolling Stone? The fake, speaking of fake news, right?
Right. The Rolling Stone article, the mattress girl. Yeah, I mean, they just, there's cases after cases. And of course, the media just jumps on these cases, and it's just kind of ridiculous. And so they totally character assassinate, because they, of course, release the name of the guy accused. But they completely destroy his ability to get a job in the future or anything else like that. So there's just so much financial, you know, kind of things that can happen too, where their reputation is completely ruined and they don't pass what's called the Google test.
So the as far as I can tell, feminists feel that their effort to achieve legal equality really has never addressed what they refer to as the market model, and the idea that supposedly the what they want to attack now is the market model, that the market essentially adjudicates all problems, and that really what we do is we guarantee that all men are created equal, meaning all men and women are created equal, and the market,
or see your
whatever
preferred gender pronoun.
All human beings are created equal, but the market creates inequality in the sense that some people perform better in the market than others. And the idea is that we've got to get away from women's issues. We've got to get away from this push toward legal equality and really attack the problem where at its heart, which is the male-dominated view of the market. What do you think about that?
Well, they want equality of outcomes is what they want. They don't want actual equality, because a lot of times when they're advocating for things, Jessica Valenti, who's like a feminist writer, she's quoted as saying, "We feminists, we don't want equality. We will preach equality until we have superiority."
So really, we want a world dominated by women. And I have actually, yeah. I have friends who have said, well, you know, one of the things that's been happening is, you know, wars have been started and men have failed and women are going to take over now and the world's going to be better. I have men that say that to me. And I always say, my view is that at the highest levels of our society, in terms of elected leaders, as well as dictators or anybody in charge, it really is it doesn't have a gender. Power isn't exercised by gender, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or, you know, Margaret Thatcher or Dilma Rousseff, who was just ousted as the Brazilian president. I mean,
right.
they can start wars. You know, obviously, we've had a few historic you know, women who have started quite a few wars back in ancient history. So,
right.
You know,
I always say it was the queen who asked for the head of John the Baptist.
Yeah, that's true.
So the idea that, you know, women are somehow the fairer sex who can handle the power better than anything, that's not actually true. I mean, just if you look at simply what's happened, even including like abortion as an example, I mean, there are 3,700 babies that are aborted every day, and it's not men who are aborting them.
Well, I mean, you would get an argument from feminists over that. I mean, some people, or really anyone, they would say, well, that, I mean, I guess I would ask you, what do you do if you're a young woman and you're in a terrible relationship and your husband's beating you up and he's just a horrible person? And I mean, what does a woman do?
See, I'm so like, I guess I'm so insensitive in a way where it's like, okay, you know, they didn't automatically like all of a sudden change like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I mean, there had to have been some signs before that this person was not exactly a fantastic choice.
Right. So you grow up in rural Minnesota and you make the best choice you can. It's a football captain. He's kind of a jerk. You get married and 2 years later, he's beating the hell out of you. Or he, you know, you see what I'm saying?
See, but that doesn't actually, the statistics don't back that. A lot of abusive relationships, the abuse is initiated by women against men almost up to over 50% of the time. So
what do you mean by abuse?
Domestic violence, actually the highest rates of domestic violence are in lesbian relationships, not heterosexual. The lowest rates of domestic violence are in gay male relationships. So and a lot of times cyclical abuse in heterosexual couples is oftentimes it's initiated by the woman against the man, and the man's doing what's called defending himself. But he goes to jail a vast majority of the time, police are called. So, I mean, that is actually a pretty rare chance that that actually is going to happen. We've kind of had it sensationalized with, like, you know, movies and stuff kind of depicting men as these, you know, violent, you know, they just can't wait to get home and beat their wives kind of types. And that's actually not how it goes a vast majority of the time.
Well, you can always go beat the dog.
Spell that, but that is the case.
Okay.
Most men live lives of quiet desperation.
So, well, that's certainly my life. My life is a life of quiet desperation. I'm kidding. But, well, kind of not, you know. But I wouldn't call it quiet desperation. You know what? I'm divorced, and I am happy in my solitude. I don't have to worry about anyone else. I don't have to fight with anybody. I don't have to be told to do something. I don't, you know, that's, I guess I'm reflecting what you're talking about. So I was,
right.
I must have been in an abusive relationship, right?
Probably. Most women got to watch out for them.
Well, yeah, that's what does somebody say? What's the word? You know, you don't want to unleash what's the woman thing? The yoni or whatever it's called?
I have no idea, but you probably don't want to release it.
Okay, so what do you tell your daughters? If your daughter walked up to you and said, I want to be a stock car driver, and then I want to become the president of the United States, or a senator or something, what do you tell her? No, honey, you got to be the little woman and stay home with your six kids that you're going to have?
No, I think that you have to pick and choose. You can't have it all. I mean, it's incredibly hard to try to be the president and ruler of the universe and also be the perfect stay-at-home mom and wife as well. You need to pick and choose what your...
Or you got to find a husband that wants to stay home and take care of the kids.
Right. And I don't, you know, I mean, I think there should be at least one parent who does try to stay home at least.
But I mean, let's talk about sex roles. Can a man do that without being completely emasculated? Basically take over the female role in the family?
I know a couple of guys who do that, and they found really good women who are not really looking for that power either. So like, there's a YouTuber, his name's Rocking Mr. E, and he actually does YouTube videos, and he's a musician, but his wife is the breadwinner, and he stays home with their two kids, and it doesn't seem like it's been bad for them. In fact, you know, he kind of praises it in a lot of ways, because he just really feels like at least one parent, biological parent, should be home with the kids, especially when they're really little. So, I mean, I think it all depends on the couple. I mean, you have to be in agreement, and you have to, you know, not sit there and be like, okay, I'm going to lord over you. Like, my husband, you know, even though he makes the money, he doesn't lord over me either.
Well,
so,
one of the things I've noticed, especially, and it tends to be in some farm families where there's definitely a division of labor. So the home is the realm of the mother, and the father is out doing farm things. And there's definitely a division of labor. They have different responsibilities, and it seems to work pretty well. But I think part of the problem is in career-oriented families or in career-oriented marriages, both people... you know, if they're both alpha dogs in the sense that they're both working really hard in their profession and doing their thing, it can get pretty contentious, because what happens if a job comes up for one in another part of the country and the other one doesn't want to move or can't move now? Then you end up flying back and forth.
I think it's kind of dangerous to go into a marriage having the your careers being the main focus. Your main goal should be building up your family. Yeah, the career is part of it, but that shouldn't be the focus.
Well, welcome to show business. I mean, that's the thing. So, you know, that's the whole vaudeville paradigm, that you're in show business and she's dancing and you're singing, and that's just the way it is. Except right. Vaudeville's dead, so you can't travel around the country. But I mean, I have friends who are musicians that tour, that they're both active. They both have careers in music. They tour together. What do you say? So you would say to your kid, here's the thing. You don't necessarily know that when you get married, you don't know that it's going to be like that. Or if you're like me,
no,
you're so naive, you don't know.
Right.
Then what?
Well, like, for example, like my 14-year-old daughter, she actually milks cows. So she actually already has a job, and she gets in there and she gets it done, and she's working in a man's field, and she can handle it. I think the biggest thing is you need to teach them to not be easily offended, because men talk more crass, and you just need to kind of prepare for that. And she does. She's fine. She can, you know, milk the cows with the best of them. So
you're saying whatever career you choose, if you decide to be like me, great. If you decide to have a career, don't expect that you're going
right.
to, you know.
You have to do things on an individual basis, and that, and you can't expect. And I think this is too kind of like my libertarian thing is, you know, what works for me may not work for the other person. I'm not a macro solutions type person. I realize that most of our problems are micro. So,
well, and I will agree with you there. I think that I actually think that one of the big problems is that, you know, and this is the thing about libertarians, is that that the idea that people will solve their problems if we can get the government to stop impinging on people's lives, that it's actually the distortion is the government sticking its nose into everyone's business that may have been well intentions. It may have been well intentioned, you know, in the beginning, but it's turned into a ridiculous bureaucracy that just gets in the way. So I agree.
Like,
what were you going to say?
Johnson, his Great Society program actually probably did more to damage the family than any other program out there, where they basically went into poor neighborhoods and they sent agents out there saying, hey, if you're single, you know, you'll get more money and aid from the government, and it incentivized women to kick men out of the home and not to keep the men around. So it's done an extraordinary amount of damage, especially in the Black community. So where 74% of the homes are run by single mothers.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the top criticisms in Black neighborhoods, is that there are no men. Where are the men? Everyone always wonders where the men are.
So. Right. And you need men, and especially strong men, to deal with. I say that children are kind of like little barbarians, and they need a strong man to, you know, tame their feral behavior.
Do you? I'm sure you have some boys, right?
I do. I have two.
What are you going to, how do you tell them, like, I don't know how old they are, but how are you going to address, you know, with the boys, how they should act, and, you know, what kind of a woman they should look for as a future wife, et cetera?
Well, I tell them to always look for, number one, a girl with a really good sense of humor, because that's like...
Just someone like Mom.
Right. One that can take a joke. So won't get too upset and take things too personally. But, and then I you know, we are... We're a religious family, so I tell them, you know, you need to find a woman who's more interested in pleasing God than even you, because in the end, once that's taken care of, usually you'll get pleased in the end, too. So it's just one of those things where you teach them that character matters a lot more, and that, you know, certain things are for certain times. So, like, marriage, sex is for marriage, so you want to find somebody who has that same goal. And, you know, I teach them a lot that, you know, how the Bible talks about don't become unequally yoked. Well, I also tell them that, you know, it doesn't just mean, you know, oh, you believe in Jesus, so do I, let's get together. It applies to your whole life goals, including your politics, your religion, what your views on family are. Does she want kids, and do you want kids? You should probably be able to have that discussion before you get married, because it would be pretty brutal, you know, you want kids, and then all of a sudden you get married, and then you're like, she's like, yeah, that's not really my thing. It's like,
right.
Well, maybe you should have known that before that.
And you're also not advocating a return to the 1950s. You're saying this is personal choice. You just feel that you don't want to be ridiculed for making this personal choice.
Right, and I think that there's been a lot of the feminist movement has done a lot to bash kind of the idea of being the stay-at-home mom, that we're subpar, and, you know, that somehow or another the working woman is more enlightened than the rest of us, because, you know, somehow or another our lives are not quote-unquote real. life. So, but yeah, so I just don't know. I think that a lot of it is so individual, and I know that circumstances also can change. And so, you know, my husband could get injured, you know, going to work tomorrow, and, you know, then what do I do?
I guess, right, you'd have to go to work. You'd have to figure something out.
Right.
Or hope that there's good workman's comp or something. No one can afford insurance, so I don't know what would happen at that point.
So
let's talk real quick, and then we'll close it. But, I mean, why? What's the difference between women overseas, let's just say Latin America and in the Pacific, you know, countries, and parts of Europe? You know, this article talks about Eastern European women who don't feel the sense of competition with men and don't try to put men down. And of course, we all see all of the TV commercials and the jokes and everything else about suddenly men have become the butt of all the jokes. How are women in these places different than women in the United States? What's wrong with women in the United States?
Two words, gratitude and respect. They are grateful for the men overseas. They are grateful for the men, and they have a respect for them. And women here in America almost bemoan the existence of men, and there's not a gratitude, and that they somehow are entitled to, treatments that they really haven't earned, and there just isn't a mutual respect. They, you know, we hear all the time about, oh, he disrespected me or all this other stuff, but they are insanely disrespectful in how they treat men here in America. There's a sense of entitlement where you will do this and you have to do that, and they're not grateful for the things that the men in their lives already are doing. So where
and I keep going back, what if you're just married to a heel, like just a bad person who's not worthy of respect? And you're saying that's your fault?
I'm not saying that it's their fault entirely, but it's also one of those things where that's not typically the rule. So it's one of those, like, do you let the exceptions to the rule define how everything should be? So most men just want to, you know, go to work and come home to a house where there's some peace and quiet. And, you know, I don't know what my husband was thinking. He wants peace and quiet. And then we had six kids.
I'm sure he was thinking that you were pretty, pretty awesome. And that, you know, he's happy to have his kids, you know, and to him, that's
true.
Peace and quiet. Right.
Right.
Does he have some place to retreat to?
Not really. Well, right now he's in our bedroom watching scary shows.
But I mean, does he have a garage to retreat to, or whatever men are supposed to have?
Not yet. See, this is where the one income is a real bummer. He doesn't have a garage. He kind of sits in his office, which is still kind of in the middle of the house, and our basement's not finished because...
Tell him I said he needs to get a big tent and put it up out there with a heater in it so he can go sit out there. I think this is one of these narratives that's going to start. I think you're going to start seeing more of this, because I think there's going to be it's pushback. Now, you're in a rural place, and so, you know, you probably have already witnessed the pushback. But what's going to happen when this pushback comes to Uptown? You think this pushback will ever come to Uptown?
I think we're kind of seeing that if you look at college campuses and how kind of the dynamic between genders is being so bastardized, in a sense. So I think we're already kind of seeing that backlash where they just have zero clue how to actually interact with each other in a way that, you know, is productive. So, I mean, a really good book that I read on it that has to do with men is by Dr. Helen Smith, and it's called Men on Strike, and it's like why men are boycotting marriage, fatherhood, and the American dream, and why it matters.
Yeah, well, I can understand it. I can understand why, although they say millennials are marrying earlier, so I'm not sure what to think of that.
I think because millennials have kind of seen, like, they've been kind of oftentimes the children of divorce. So millennials actually take marriage a lot more seriously than, say, Gen Xers or baby boomers, because they know what it's like to be from a broken home. And so they actually do take marriage quite seriously, a lot more than, say, the previous generations, because they've lived in kind of the disaster zone of bad marriages.
True that. Jennifer Jo Loken, thank you.
You are welcome.
So one of the cool things about podcasting is that you can just have a conversation with somebody without worrying about time constraints. It's one of the things I love the most about podcasting. And I think that's a great message for advertisers. I think it's a great message for anybody that's used to listening to the radio, where you have these segments. And you can hear it in the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, where you've got to get something out in 10 minutes or 9 minutes or 7 minutes. It's so much more conversational to be able to just sit down, do a podcast, and have this conversation. So that's one of the cool things. Now, I mentioned at the end of the podcast that I would have a special message for plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, and HVAC control specialists. Partially because of the advertising of the Bob Davis Podcast and partially because of good management and quality service, Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul is growing pretty quickly, and they have a great need for plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, and HVAC control specialists. Because of the steady growth, it doesn't matter where you are in the metro. It doesn't even matter where you are listening and hearing this podcast. If you have these skills, give Ryan a call. They can put you to work right away. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. You can also get a message to them via ryanplumbing.com. And thanks again, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Again, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com. Also the stream at thebobdavispodcast.com. Which people, as soon as you hit the page on a desktop, you're listening to it, you can hear it. And of course, I really appreciate the likes, the shares, and the favoriting and the following on Facebook and Twitter and my favorite social media, Instagram. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. I will tell you more about that in future podcasts. Thanks for listening to podcast 578.